would say it's a lot smaller crowd, but it's a pretty good smaller crowd. But thankful for everyone who is out tonight. We had several visitors this morning. I'm not really sure if any of them were directly related to the visit yesterday, except for maybe one was. And so that was a good thing. And nevertheless, it was still good. So thankful for all of that. Tonight we're going to be talking about, from this passage here in Matthew 6, except not really talking about Matthew 6, but this idea of what Jesus says, when you fast. And he's giving that there in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 there in the Sermon on the Mount of, when you fast, this is how you ought to do it. And we have to begin tonight by asking a question, should a Christian today fast? Well, based on what Jesus says here, right here in Matthew 6, isn't it implied that Christians will fast? You may not have a direct command of, Christians, you better fast this day, and Christians, you better fast for this reason. But it is implied, clearly, that disciples of Jesus will in fact fast. Not only here in Matthew 6, but I want you to think about it another place. That in chapter 9, and we've already pointed this out, if you're in the upstairs class on Sunday morning, you would see in chapter 9, the other disciples, the disciples of the Pharisees, they came to Jesus, and they said, why do your disciples not fast? Excuse me, it's the disciples of John that come to him in verse 14. And Jesus says to them in verse 15, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. Not and then, they might fast. And then they will fast. You have all these various times and all these various reasons that it is implied that they will do so. And there in Matthew chapter 6, it's in that chapter of when beware of doing your righteousness to be seen by men. So you've got the almsgiving to start the chapter. You've got the prayer in the middle of the chapter. And then you have the fasting, that all of these things are considered acts of righteousness. So what part of righteousness should we not do? Again, it is implied that fasting should be in a Christian's life. Why? What's the point of it? I would like to suggest to you that fasting is beneficial. And I've got three reasons right here, and we're going to go through and see some reasons to fast for purposes in doing that. But what is beneficial for the Christian? Because it helps us, I think, humble ourselves before God. I want you to go to Psalm chapter 35, or Psalm 35. What's an interesting thing about this particular psalm, this psalm of David, as he mentions fasting, I want you to notice who he is fasting for. It is not a fast for his friends. It is not a fast for his family. It is not a fast for himself. The reason that he is fasting, if you look there in Psalm 35 and verse 13, he says, but as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled myself, how? With fasting, and my prayer would return to my own heart. Who did he do that for? I want you to go back in chapter, in verse 1. Plead, O Lord, with those who strive with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of the shield and buckler, and so on. In verse 4, let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor who seek after my life. And who is he fasting for? He's fasting for those who are after him. And I want you to notice verse 14, who he's fasting for them like. I paced about as though he were my friend or brother, and I bowed down heavily as one who mourns for his mother. When David is performing this fast, and he's doing it like it is for his loved one, it is not for his loved one. But it is for the one who is striving against him, even for his enemies. Isn't that something special? That is amazing to be able to do that. Not only does it make you do things that are kind of outrageous and crazy, but it also, as Jesus says, you remember in Luke chapter 4 and Matthew chapter 4, when Jesus, He goes the 40 days and the 40 nights being tempted in the wilderness, right? You remember Satan, he tempts Him by saying, turn these stones to bread. And what does Jesus say? It is written, man shall not live by bread alone. Fasting helps us understand that principle. That I can get through a day, or I can get through a period of time without what I normally have. Because I'm focusing on God and on His Word. If I don't ever take the physical things away, sometimes it will be easy to not appreciate the spiritual that God has given us. We'll see more examples of that. But it helps us realize what is really important. And thirdly, as we look at this reason for beneficial, is that typically when we read about fasting, especially in the New Testament and even in the Old Testament, it was almost always accompanied by prayer. When was the last time prayer was not a good thing? Prayer with God, communication with God, is a good thing when you're not doing it, as Matthew 6, to be seen by others and to get the praise of others. But to be in communication with God, that is a good thing. It is beneficial. So, when was the last time you fasted? I'll be honest. I didn't really get into fasting or understand that I really needed to do that. Really until last year, last June. I was in one of the camps that I work in the summer, and I was sitting in this class, and a lot of this material comes from a man by the name of Andy Cantrell. And he was talking about the disciplines of disciples. The teachings that disciples go through. The things that they do. And one of the classes that he spent was on fasting. And I had never done any fasting whatsoever. And he was teaching this class, and it kind of really hit me. I should be doing more fasting. And so, I ask you the question. When was the last time you fasted? Maybe you never have. We often think of a fast as this fast is, I don't eat any food, I don't drink any water, and I don't do that for 24 hours. Well, the Jews, that's not really how their day worked. We would start ours, probably if you were going to start our day, you would think your day starts when you wake up, right? That's when we say we start our day. When did the Jews start their day? When the sun went down was when their day would start. And so normally when you would read about them having a 3-day feast or a 7-day feast, it would be from sundown to sundown would be one day. And then sundown to sundown would be another day. Well, what are you doing in some of that time? You're sleeping. You're not really thinking about food. Otherwise, you start at 8, say you start at 6 a.m. And you go 6 a.m. to 6 a.m., what are you doing the majority of that time? You're sleeping in a lot of that time. You're not necessarily focusing on what needs to be focused, but from sundown to sundown, there's a lot of time to focus. That may not have made any sense, but they would be sundown to sundown. So they would eat, let's say we started today, right? I would not suggest this. But let's say you go home today and you say, man, I've been convicted by this, I'm going to fast. And you go home and you eat a meal right before sundown. That would be the day before. You can make it through the night, through the morning, until sundown tomorrow night before you ate. If you waited till in the morning, your 24-hour feast fast would actually turn into more like 32 because of your sleep carrying over. 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. You would miss some of that time. Again, that doesn't make sense right now. It's not explaining. I should have a chart about it. But there's sundown to sundown, not sun up to sun up. Does that make sense? It's okay if it doesn't. But we often think of this idea of a fast as completely no food, no nothing, no nothing. Well, that's not really the way it always works. There are two kind of ways you come about partaking in a fast. One is you go about doing it and you didn't plan to do it. You didn't set out, and you might call this an unplanned or a natural fast. Now I want you to go to 1 Samuel, and you'll know this story in 1 Samuel chapter 1, and it would be Hannah. And Hannah wanted a child very badly. And she would go to the temple every year, to the tabernacle every year, where at Shiloh, where the place was. And notice what she would do while she is there. She was being tormented by the husband's other wife, by Elkanah's other wife. But notice there in verse 7, year by year, she went up to the house of the Lord, and she provoked her. Therefore, she wept and did not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Did she go planning not to eat? It doesn't appear that way. It appears as though she went and she was so sorrowful and she was so mournful that she would not eat. I imagine you've probably experienced something along those lines. When you receive some very bad news or you lost a loved one, you just weren't hungry. And so you didn't eat. Or you get caught up in doing something and you get busy in your work or you get busy in helping somebody or something and you just forget to eat. That in itself is a fast. You've withheld food from yourself. And you didn't plan to do that. You just naturally did that based on the emotion that came forward. But then there are other times when you plan to fast. And the Jews would have been commanded, I believe, one time to fast every year. In Leviticus chapter 16, as this would be the Day of Atonement, the day in which they would sacrifice the lamb that was going to cover their sins. You go down to verse 31. All of the people, it is to be a solemn rest for you. And here's the phrase that virtually everyone that I've ever read takes about this verse. And you shall afflict your souls. It is a statute forever. Virtually every person that, and I shouldn't say virtually, every person that I've read takes the idea of the afflicting of your soul to be a fast. That you are to fast at this time every single year. And if that is the case, this would be the only command for Israel to fast. Would be this time every year, the Day of Atonement. Now, why might they be commanded on this day to fast? What were they being reminded of? Their sins. Their sins that needed to be covered, that needed to be placed and substituted onto this goat. So I think you have two different types of fast. You have one where you plan to do it, and you have one where you just naturally do it. It just comes about that way. But then you have three types that you might decide to do or you might accidentally do if you want to use that. You want to use that phrase. You've got your usual fast like Jesus did there in Luke 4 and Matthew 4, where you don't have any food, but you still drink water. So you're not completely dehydrating yourself. You're not completely taking your body away from everything. The usual fast would be no food, but you drink water. But there would be times when you would do a total fast, where there would be no food and no water. And you would see this, I want you to see this in Ezra chapter 10. You'll know Acts 9 there. That's when the Apostle Paul, he's not the Apostle Paul at that point, he's Saul, he's been on the road to Damascus, he's seen the Lord, he's been blinded, and he's in Damascus fasting without eating and drinking for 3 days, waiting on Ananias to come and tell him what he is to do. And the text tells us there in Acts 9, and when he came, he ate food and was strengthened. But he didn't have any food or drink in those 3 days. But notice here in Ezra chapter 10, with the people, with Ezra, and some of you have been studying this in your class not too long ago, or maybe even this quarter downstairs, is that right? Ezra's been downstairs this quarter? Anyway, the people there, they give this fast, and I'll find Ezra chapter 10 in a second in my Bible. And you'll notice there in verse 6 about the sorrow overtaking these foreign wives. And Ezra rose up in verse 6 before the house of God, and he went into the chamber of Jehoiachin, or whatever his name is, and he came there, and he ate no bread, and he drank no water, for he mourned. Why? Because of those guilt of the captivity. There's this great idea of mourning that goes along with what Ezra did and what Paul did. Paul was mourning because he had persecuted the Lord and the Lord's people, and he committed all this sin. Ezra is mourning because of the sin of the people in taking these foreign wives. And so he ate no food, and he drank no water. But then you have also what is called a partial fast, where you see this in Daniel chapter 10. I want you to go here in Daniel 10. That Daniel, he still eats food. He still drinks drink. But he doesn't drink any specialty drinks. He doesn't eat any special foods. It's almost like the base of the base. So he keeps himself. By the way, what role did Daniel have? At this time, he would be second in command in all of the land. He would have the choicest foods that he could want. And notice what he does in verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning. How long? 3 weeks. So, 21 days. And I ate no pleasant food. No meat or wine came into my mouth. Nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 weeks were fulfilled. So what did he do during this fast? He still ate and he still drank, but nothing that was special. It's almost like he made himself common for a little bit. But what else didn't he do? We might say he didn't bathe. He didn't anoint himself for 3 weeks until his mourning was over with. So what's that all about? Why would someone be willing to either withhold food, water, specialty items from themselves? Why would they do that? We saw a very similar, very common thing, didn't we? Mourning. But that's not the only reason people fasted. We have plenty of biblical reasons and purposes that people fasted other than mourning. I want you to go to the New Testament. I want you to go to Acts chapter 13. We're going to look at Acts 13 and then we're going to look at Acts 14. In Acts 13, you remember there is the town of Antioch of Syria. In Antioch of Syria, they have all of these teachers that are very talented. You have people like Niger, and you have people like Barnabas, and Simeon, and Lucius, and Manon, and there were a lot of guys there. But I want you to see what they're doing in verse 2. As they ministered to the Lord, and what's it mean to minister? They served. As they served to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Spirit said, "Now separate to me Barnabas and Saul for the work for which I have called them." So what does it appear that these teachers are doing? They're serving the Lord and they're fasting. And while this fast is going on, the Holy Spirit says, "I need Barnabas and I need Saul." He chooses them to go on this mission. And this is what we call the first missionary journey. The so-called first missionary journey. They go out. Now notice what they do now in verse 3. Then, having fasted and prayed and laid hands on them, they sent them away. It appears as though this is another fast. That there was a fast in them being prepared to go on this mission. That the congregation, it appears, fasted to get them ready for a mission. I'm here to suggest that I think that's partly what Jesus was doing in Matthew chapter 4 and Luke chapter 4. He was preparing for the work that he was about to do. And how he was going to go teach to the people and he was going to be tempted. And in 3 years he was going to have to die for the people. I think he was out not only being tempted, but preparing himself for his mission. We're going to see him doing that at other times. So when might we fall into a situation like that? Go to chapter 14. You're still there in 14, right? Go to chapter 14. And remember, Paul and Barnabas, they went through all these cities throughout the area of what we would call Turkey in that area. And they go back and they retreat their steps and they go back through. And I want you to see it down in verse 22. So strengthening the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith and saying, we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. That's what we got to do. Now notice 23. So when they had appointed elders in every church, and what did they do? Prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord whom they had believed. What's the third reason? You see, the churches fasting as they appointed the elders. They were giving them to the Lord. I think it's a good thing for a church when it comes time to appoint elders to participate in praying and fasting based on that's what they did in every church as they went through doing and appointing these elders in every church. Now, we don't have any elders in this congregation. I pray one day that we will. I pray that one day we will have men who fit the qualifications. And if I'm still preaching here at the time I'm going to be preaching about, we should probably think about fasting and praying together as a church as we appoint these men as overseers of the flock of God which is among us. Because that's what we see right here. Not only is it just preparing this mission and getting ready for all these things, we see the examples of the mourning. And you can see there in 1 Samuel 31 that sometimes they mourn from sun up to sun down, you would see. And then in 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 12, they mourned 7 days. So you've got various amounts of time that people would mourn over someone. I can't remember which king it was, but one of the kings, they mourned 30 days for the king after he had died. That's a pretty serious, substantial time. How long did Daniel mourn there in chapter 10? 3 weeks. This is a serious amount of time. You see it? Short amount. You see it? Long amount. When you fast, he doesn't say how long you fast, but when you fast, do this. For mourning, you've got that. But also think about this fifth reason of when you're going to God, when you're pleading to God, which is in fact kind of what David was doing in Psalm 35, but I want you to see it from David in 2 Samuel chapter 12. Now you'll remember in 2 Samuel chapter 12, David has committed the great sin of Bathsheba in chapter 11. He realizes that he has done wrong in chapter 12. And he is told that the child that Bathsheba is going to have is going to die. And so you have verse 16. David therefore pleaded with God for his child. And what did David do? Fasted and went in and lay all night on the ground. What is he doing? He's begging God for his child. And so he refrains, and I'm going to say from comfort, as he is praying this prayer to God, pleading on his behalf. If something is really important to you, you're willing to give some things up so that God would hear it in hopes of that. There's your prayer and your fasting combined. Notice another reason you might see. You see this with Ahab there in 1 Kings chapter 21, where Ahab, very wicked man, brings all kind of idolatry into Israel, the Baal worship and all of those things. Remember, there was a guy by the name of Naboth, and he wanted his vineyard. Because Naboth had a great vineyard. And he offers to buy the vineyard from Naboth. And Naboth says, no, this is the family heir, this is the family loan, I'm not going to sell it to you. And so Ahab is all sad about that, you remember? And his great, lovely, beautiful wife Jezebel walks through the door and says, why are you pouting? Naboth won't sell me his vineyard. You're the king. Go take it. And so they have Naboth stoned, and they take his vineyard. The Lord says, you and all your descendants are going to be wiped out. You're done. The dogs will eat your eat of you in the city, and the birds in the field. Notice how he responds, how Ahab responds in verse 27. So it was when Ahab heard these words that he tore his clothes and he put on sackcloth on his body, and he fasted and lay in sackcloth and went about mourning. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, see how Ahab humbled himself before me? Because he has humbled himself before me, I will not bring the calamity in his days. And in the days of his son, I will bring the calamity on his house. I don't get the impression that Ahab was just trying to look like he was sorry. I get the impression from God's response that Ahab was sorry. He was repenting of that, and the Lord relented and said, okay, he's not going to see it with his eyes, but it will happen in his son's days. Now we go on to see the rest of Ahab's life, that he's going to do some other terrible things. But in this instant, I humbled himself before God. How? With prayer and fasting. You ever been in a situation where you've really messed up? You've really done God wrong. You've really done other people wrong. Maybe you murdered a child. Or maybe you've just done something else that was just terrible. And you feel bad about it. Even wicked Ahab knew what to do. He went about mourning with a fast. And here I am trying to stuff my face with ice cream. That's what I like to do. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? This whole idea of humbling yourself in this way. Ezra is another interesting one. We see him fasting several times. Here in Ezra chapter 8, it's when the people are returning back from captivity. He's bringing the folks back. And he goes on to say that he was afraid to ask the king for help. Meaning the king that was sending them, he was scared to ask for horsemen and guards and all of those things. And so this is what he proclaims as they're sitting at the river. He proclaims this for the people in verse 21. He said, I proclaimed a fast there at the river that we might, and notice it again, humble ourselves before our God to seek from Him the right way for us and our little ones and all our possessions. Meaning, we want safety for us, our little ones, and our things. And he tells why. For I was ashamed to request of the king an escort of the soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy on the road, because I said, the hand of our God is upon all those who is for good, for those who seek Him. But His power and His wrath are against those who forsake Him. So we fasted and entreated our God for this, and He answered our prayer. He had made this great, bold statement of faith. God does good for those who seek Him. And so I was afraid if I asked for horsemen and soldiers, He would think that I didn't trust in my God. And so we proclaimed a fast so that God would hear us. And what did God do? He answered our prayer. Most of us have probably faced some danger in our life. We're not sure about if we're going to keep a job. We're not sure what is going to happen maybe with a child that is sick or the family member that is sick. Fasting would be an appropriate time for that. Or maybe it's the idea of you're facing uncertainty. And you see this in Esther chapter 4. When the decree had been given that the Jews on the certain day, they would all be destroyed. And Esther sends a message to her cousin Mordecai saying, you and your people don't eat, don't drink for 3 days. And me and my women, we will not drink for 3 days as well. She says, I'll go before the king, which by the way is not lawful, and which by the way was if he didn't receive her in, she would be killed. And she said, I will go before him. And I will ask. And she does just that. And guess who hears her when she goes before the king? the king does. God is not given credit for that. God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. But I think we can see that God heard that entreaty of Mordecai and his men, of Esther and her women, that she was allowed in the presence of the king. I think we can all see times in our life where these things could be applicable. Here's what I want you to see about fasting. It's not only taking away of food or drink. There are other things that you can take a break from that would fall in the category of fasting. We've already seen some of these. But I want you to see one of the things that maybe we don't think about is this idea of sleep. And I want you to go to Luke 6. And I think you see Jesus doing this the night that He chooses His 12 apostles. He will go up on the mountain here in verse 12. He departs from the people. And so it came to pass in those days that He went to the mountain to pray. And He continued all night in prayer to God. So did He sleep that night? No. He prayed all night. And what did He do the next morning, verse 13? And when it was day, He called His disciples to Himself, and from there He chose 12, whom He also named apostles. I think the night that Jesus decided who His 12 were going to be was a night that He fasted from sleep all night long in prayer to God. We see that in Daniel chapter 6 with the king. When Daniel is thrown into the lion's den, the king that threw him in did not want to throw him in there. But he had made the decree that he must be thrown in. And so you'll notice the king, notice how the text says it. The king went to his palace and he spent the night fasting. And no musicians were brought before him and sleep went from him. I get the idea that this was kind of an unplanned fast, that sleep went from him. He couldn't sleep. Musicians were not brought to him. And that's another thing that we can take a break from, is entertainment. Where the musicians would have come in and they would have played, and you know about the jesters and the jokers of the court. They would come into the king and they would be the entertainment for the night. Notice what it says there in verse 18. There were no musicians who were brought before him. There was no entertainment in that way. Now, remember when Saul had musicians brought before him? When the spirit would come upon him, the distressing spirit, he would have David come play. Some people, they turn on music at night to help them sleep, don't they? I wonder if the king had somebody who came in on a regular basis to play music for him so that he would be able to sleep. And on this night, he didn't have anyone come in, and therefore sleep remained from him. Sleep went from him. But I think we can see, what if I sat down one day and I said, all right, today, no radio. Today, no internet reading. Today, no TV when I get home from work. I'm just going to think, and I'm going to meditate. I'm going to think about what I have to do. I'm going to pray to God throughout this day, and I'm going to do my work, and I'm going to do all of those things. But when I would normally have entertainment on, driving in my car, or sitting on my couch, instead of that, I am praying to God with his focus. I think that's what you see. You also see in 1 Corinthians 7 that sometimes a husband and a wife will consent for a time to withhold, to not participate in sexual activity. And notice why? For the sake of prayer in this time. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. This is not something that the Apostle Paul says ought to be done without consent of both parties. Both parties must agree to this. I want you to see another reason. Another thing to sometimes take a break from, a fast from, are people. Jesus himself did that. In Matthew 14, I want you to see this. That the multitudes are all around him. And he commands his disciples to go out into the boat. And he sends them out into the boat. And he's been trying to get away from all the crowds and all the people, but he just couldn't do it. When we get down to verse 23, he's able to send the multitudes away after feeding the 5,000. He sent the multitudes away, and he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. Sometimes we just need to get away. Sometimes we just need to get away from people, even if it's only for a few short hours. Because you remember, it's that same night that Jesus comes walking on the water to them. He joins them later. But he needed to be away from them for some period. That's a good thing. I think that is, in a sense, a fast. He's praying by himself. The last reason, or the last maybe other thing, is comfort. Remember when David was pleading with the Lord all night for the child? Where was he laying? On the floor. What did many of these people put on? Their most comfortable clothes? Sackcloth. Ashes, all of these various things. And what did Daniel not eat? He didn't eat any fine foods. He didn't drink any wine. But he ate the base food and drank the base water. And he didn't put on any fine clothes. And he didn't bathe. He went going about kind of gross life. Sometimes we can take a break from those things for a spiritual purpose. And that gets us to our conclusion. When you fast, there are really three reasons. We know Matthew 6, but we start in Isaiah 58. Go to Isaiah 58. I don't know why I didn't start in Matthew 6. I guess because I closed in Matthew 6 now that I think about it. Isaiah 58, the people are fasting. And the Lord is not happy about their fast. The problem is that if you get in this routine of fasting, and by the way, if I understand the law correctly, they would have been commanded to fast that one time every year. And so as a Jew, you're going to fast that one time every year. But what could be a potential for that one time every year? It is an empty ritual. Your heart is not there. And I believe that's what we have in Isaiah 58 in verse 2. He says, "They seek me daily. And they delight to know my ways in a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God." And think back to what Jesus said there in Matthew 6. Don't do your righteousness to be seen of men. They did it. It was a commandment of God. It was an ordinance of God to do this. They did it. But why have we fasted and you did not see, verse 3? Why have we afflicted our souls and you did not take notice? They're saying, we did it. Why didn't you notice, God? He said, in fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure. And you exhort all your laborers. And indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. The reason they had fasted before, strife, argument, wicked reasons. But today, it almost seems like for the first time, they're actually fasting to be heard by God. And he says, you didn't fast that way before, and that's why I didn't hear you. But you will fast, and I will hear you when your heart is there, when you truly seek me. Don't get in this habit of, I'm going to fast at this time every year, and it just become a ritual. You may decide that you're going to start your year every year with a fast as you dedicate the year to God. That'd be great to do. Don't let it become an empty ritual. Second thing you don't want it to do. Don't do it for asceticism. We're not going to take the time to go to Colossians 2 or 1 Timothy 4. But the idea is where you beat yourself up in the name of religion. You say, look what I endure for the name of religion. And so you beat yourself. You withhold all this stuff. And so there's stories about the monks and Buddha where they would take a whip and they would strike themselves on the back over and over and over until blood would pour out and their skin would be all ripped up. And they would do this and they would say, look at me. Look how great I am. I'm bearing the marks of Jesus. The Bible says don't do that. It is not for that purpose. Don't do it for that. And don't do it to be seen of men. People can know that you're fasting, especially if it's a long fast and you're not showering. They're probably going to recognize that you're not showering and be like, you need to shower. I'll shower when I finish my fast. But notice Jesus said there in Matthew 6, anoint your head with oil. Don't don't appear that way. I don't think he's saying you can't be like, you know what I'm saying. Don't do it to be seen. Don't do it because everybody else is doing it. Here's why you need to do it. Three things we've already seen. It's a natural response to how you feel. Whether you're sorrowful over a loved one, or you're sorrowful over your sin, or you are nervous about something, or you're trying to figure out what it is you're going to do, or you're dedicating yourself to God, let that be a natural response. Or you do it because you realize you need to humble yourself before God. Maybe I've been pretty prideful. Maybe I've looked at myself and I'm just doing it and I'm saying, God, you got to do all this. I realize, oh, I've been a jerk about that. I need to humble myself. Fasting is one of the ways to humble ourselves. And lastly, when you fast, don't do it just to take things away, but do it so that you're drawing closer and seeking God. I think we can find this pretty applicable to us, where there are times in our life where we need to fast. Let's not just discount it. That's what the Jews did. I think we see we can do that as well. Tonight's lesson hasn't been about becoming a Christian. It's been about realizing who we are and maybe trying to help us stay appreciative of it's not man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. But if you're here tonight and you know what you want to do to become a Christian, and you know what Jesus says, and you're ready to do that, we've got the opportunity to do that now. Or if you need the prayers of the church, we ask that you come now as we stand and as we sing.